devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's July 7th, 2010, in Radhapurst, Belgium. We're reading from Canto 4, Chapter 28. Paranjana becomes a woman in the next life. Text 40. Syava pakatyat. Syava pakati. Savya pakatayatmanam.
Savya pakatayatmanam.
Syava pakatayatmanam.
Savya pakatayatmanam.
Ayatmanam. Is that right?
There is no key.
Savya Kat. Are you missing T?
Katyatmanam.
Katta. Yat manam.
Katta.
K-A-T-A. Missing a T and an A. No. It's hard enough to say when you have it right. P A K A T A. You meant in figuring. Just stick it on the top. There we go. Very good. Okay. Excellent. Okay. Sava pakatayatmanam.
Sava pakatayatmanam.
Vyatiri tatayatmani.
Vyatiri tatayatmani.
Vidvan swapna iva marsha.
Vidvan swapna iva marsha.
Shakshinam viraramaha.
Shakshinam viraramaha.
Savyapakatayatmanam.
Savyapakatayatmanam.
Vyatirikta
atmani. Vyatirikta atmani.
Vidvan svatna iva marsha.
Vidvan svatna iva marsha.
Sakshinam viraramaha.
Sakshinam viraramaha.
Savyapakatayatmanam.
Savyapakatayatmanam.
Vivan Svapna Iva Marsha. So remember, this is a king, Malaya Dwaja. He's in the forest, he's Vanaprastha, he's been meditating for a long time, and in the previous verse he attained Rati, or attraction, stage of Bhava. And now he's about to attain the stage of Prema. So word for word. Sama. King Malaya Dwaja. Vyapakataya. By all pervasiveness. Atmanam. The supersoul. Vyatiriktataya.
By differentiation.
Atmani. In his own self. Vidvan. Perfectly educated. Swapne. In a dream. Eva. Like. Amarsha. Of deliberation. Shakshinam. The witness. Virama. Virarama. He came indifferent. Certainly. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. King Malaya Dwaja attained perfect knowledge by being able to distinguish the supersoul from the individual soul. The individual soul is localized, whereas the supersoul is all pervasive. He became perfect in knowledge that the material body is not the soul, but that the soul is the witness of the material body. Purport. The conditioned soul is often frustrated in trying to understand the distinctions between the material body, the supersoul, and the individual soul. So what are the three things we're looking at here?
Supersoul,
soul, and the body. So these are the three main topics that are to be known. What is matter, what is God, and who am I? And the Bhagavad Gita also discusses, what else does the Bhagavad Gita discuss? Five topics of Bhagavad Gita.
Time
and karma. But time and karma are really part of
material world.
So they're subcategories. So you can say there's nature, God, and the living entity. These are the three things being discussed here. There are two types of Mayavadi philosophers: the followers of the Buddhist philosophy and the followers of the Shankara philosophy. The followers of Buddha do not recognize that there is anything beyond the body. The followers of Shankara conclude that there is no separate existence of the Paramatma, the Supersoul. So the Buddhists say all there is matter, and the Shankaras say all there is Brahman. The Shankarites believe that the individual soul is identical with the Paramatma in the ultimate analysis. But the Vaishnava philosopher, who is perfect in knowledge, knows that the body is made of the external energy and that the supersoul, the Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he has three there, supersoul, Paramatma, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is sitting with the individual soul and is distinct from him. As Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita 13.3, what's 13.3? Kshetrik jnan prapimam vidhi sarva kshetri shubharata kshetri kshetra vyoryanam yatta jnana matamma. What's the translation? I have to get it exactly. What's the meaning?
One who knows the difference between the body and the knower of the body.
Okay, good. Oh, sign of Bharata, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies, and to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. The body is taken to be the field. Kshetra. Kshetra means field. Like we say Bhagavad Gita took place at Kshetra. And the individual soul is taken to be the worker in that field. Yet there is another who is known as the supersoul, who, along with the individual soul, simply witnesses. The individual soul works and enjoys the fruits of the body, whereas the supersoul simply witnesses the activities of the individual soul, but does not enjoy the fruits of those activities. The supersoul is present in every field of activity, whereas the individual soul is present in his one localized body. King Malaya Dwaja attained this perfection of knowledge and was able to distinguish between the soul and the supersoul, and the soul and the material body. And I'm going to ask you a question about the relationship of the Sanskrit of this verse to the translation. Syava pakatayatmanam vyakiri tatayatmani vidvan swapna ivamarsha shakshinam viraramaha. King Malayadwaja attained perfect knowledge by being able to distinguish the supersoul from the individual soul. The individual soul is localized, whereas the supersoul is all-pervasive. He became perfect in knowledge that the material body is not the soul, but that the soul is the witness of the material body. What word in the Sanskrit does not appear anywhere in this translation? What Sanskrit word is not anywhere in the translation? Swapna. Swapna means? Okay, remember that. We'll get to that, God willing, at the end of the class. So hold on to that. So here, Malayadwaja is understanding the difference between the field, the worker in the field, and the owner of the field. Pretty simple analogy that's given in Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter, and that here Malayadwaja, by his transcendental ecstasy, is realizing. Realized knowledge, it's not just in the head. You actually see it, like the difference between reading a book on swimming and swimming. So, pretty simple understanding, though. We all have a place where we live. The place where we live ultimately belongs to who owns the place where we live? Krishna. And below that? The government, probably. Transcendental people. The government. Wherever you live is ultimately owned by the government. How do you know that the government owns it?
It taxes you.
It taxes you, right? You have to pay the government something. The government wants some of the profit from your staying there. How else do you know it belongs to the government? Because they can take it away. And they can take it away at any time. Now, if you have a nice government with good laws, they'll have to give you some warning and some money. But they may not give you very much warning, and they may not give you very much money. But they can take it. They can say, sorry, you've got to be out of here in a week. And for many of us, who else owns where we're living? Below the government.
The bank.
The bank. The bank or a landlord. Right? And the landlord, if you're renting, if you don't own, the landlord can also ask you to leave. Now again, in some countries there are laws about how much warning they have to give you and under what conditions they can ask you to leave. But they can also ask you to leave. And the other way you know that it belongs to the landlord is you have to pay rent. So you have to pay rent and you have to pay taxes. And then another way you know that it's owned by the landlord and it's owned by the government is what? So they can take it away, you have to pay them something, and what else? Something else that you know that it's not yours.
You have to behave in a certain way.
You have to behave in a certain way. When you rent a place, there's often conditions. You're not allowed to have dogs, something like that, right? You can't trash the property. If you understand my Americanism? You can't turn the property into a pile of rubbish. You can't break the walls. Maybe you can't even have loud parties. And the government also has rules. You can't use your home to grow marijuana in the basement. Some people do that. And then the government comes and takes their home away. Or takes them out of the home. Sorry, you can't live here anymore. You can't use your car to commit a crime. The government will take your car away and take you out of the car. Put you someplace else. Sorry, you can't use that car anymore. You can't use that home anymore if you're using it for illegal activities, if you're using that for activities against the government. Or recently, there was headline news in America that I think 14 or 20 couples were arrested as Russian spies, which was really interesting because I thought the days of the Russian spies was over. I thought we weren't fighting, the Americans weren't fighting with the Russians anymore. And these were seemingly ordinary people. They were all suburban couples, one of them was a college professor. But because they were doing activities against the government, they were all taken out of their homes. They lost their property. So in the same way with this body, we can be thrown out of this body at any moment. Of course, we don't tend to believe it. We think, I'm going to stay in this body forever. But we have plenty of evidence that people get thrown out of their body, sometimes with notice and sometimes with no notice. Right? Sometimes people are just going about their business and poof, they're out of their body. Right? Some car hits them or they fall down from a heart attack. And other times they get some notice. Okay, you've got 3 months to get your stuff together before you get evicted. And not only can we be thrown out of our body, we can lose any of the facilities of our body. Even while we're in it, we can lose the use of our arms and legs, or our digestion, or our eyesight, or anything. Any portion of our body can be taken away. Any portion of our mental facilities can be taken away, with or without notice. So obviously, I'm not the owner. If I own something, then who can take it away? Other than a thief. And I also know I'm not the owner because I can't do with this body whatever I please. Just try. Can you fly? Anybody here fly without an airplane? Or a glider? There's one devotee in Germany who is a hang glider, I think, something like that. I'm not getting it right, and if he hears this recording, I'm really sorry that I'm not explaining the profession correctly. But some of those things, human-powered flight machines, and he sells them and he does them and teaches people. But we can't just jump in the air and fly. I can't live underwater. I know a friend who's a scuba diving instructor. So, you know, you get a special suit and a special tank and you can live under the water for a while, but I can't just live under the water. I can't do with this body whatever I want. I can do some things, sometimes. But even if I make a plan, today I'm going to do, you know, this and this and this. Will it definitely happen? No. I don't even know what the percentage is that my plans happen. If I figured it out, it probably wouldn't be terribly good. So I can't use this body for whatever I want, and it can get taken away from me at any moment. So an intelligent person says, I'm different from the body. Because I can't be taken away. Nobody can take away me. Even people who are being tortured, sometimes they can resist the torture, isn't it? And hold on to their will. Nobody can take away me, but somebody can take away everything that I own, including this body. Or as Prabhupada would say, nobody says, I body. And we always say my body or my finger. Of course, sometimes we say myself, but we also say I. We never say I body. We all can understand. And if you look at all of the literature of every culture of the world, you'll find there's so many stories of people changing their body but retaining their identity. And this continues in the modern media. You know, in the fairy tales and the traditional tales, somebody will be turned into a dog, or they'll be turned into, or they'll change gender, and they remain the same person, isn't it? Aren't there even modern books and movies like that? Where someone, they're in a different body, but they have the same identity? And we can all understand that. We can all understand. Oh, this person's become a dog, but they're the same person. Just now they have a dog body. Everybody can understand. Everybody can relate to them. Why? Because we all know I have a different identity than this body. And we all know that someone else owns everything. If we think about it even for, we've just been talking for about 6 minutes. If you just think about it for 5 or 6 minutes, you can understand someone else owns everything. So these three, there's matter, there's me, and there's God. Pretty simple thing to understand. It's not a difficult thing to understand. Just like I've come here to Radhadesh to do some service for the college. So I asked a couple days ago, what is my job description? What is it that you hope that I'll get done before I leave? So I can understand. There's a place to work. Right? There's a place to work. There's me, the worker. There's the college, who's the owner. I don't own the room. I don't own the job. I am not the room. I don't think, oh, now I'm this room. Nor do I think I'm the job. Nor do I think I'm the owner. Now, if I know that there's an owner and a field and a job to be done in the field and I'm the worker, then what question am I going to naturally ask? What's my job? I'm going to ask the owner, what's my job? What can I do? That's the question I asked. I said, what can I do so that you'll be happy with me when I leave? Isn't that the natural question? If someone else owns everything, and someone else controls everything, and I'm different from the things, then I want to ask, what am I supposed to be doing here? I want to ask, who am I? Right? Sometimes in a job you get a title. I don't know if I have any title in this job. But, you know, who am I? What's my role? And what's my job? Isn't that what you ask? In everything. When you have a relationship or friendship with someone else, you're trying to figure out what's my role and what's going to make the other person happy with me. We're always asking that question. What's the field of activities? What's the place? What's the venue? Who am I in relationship to the place? Who's in charge? And what am I supposed to do in this place to please the person who's in charge? So why don't we ask that about life? Well, that should be the main question about life. Once I understand, wait a minute, I'm not this body. The body belongs to someone else who's controlling it. It's just my field of activities. Now, even if you're selfish, even if you're completely materialistic and selfish, you're going to ask, what's the best way I can work this field to get what I want? And the best way to find that answer is to ask the person who owns it, who created it, to whom it belongs. If you lend me some machine, and I'm using it, and I want to know even how to use it for my purposes, I should ask you, how does it work? What's the instruction manual? So Prabhupada says in speaking about this verse in Bhagavad Gita that he quotes here in this book, Kshetra Chantrakimamadhi, Sarva Kshetra Jubharata, that Krishna's trying to tell us, work this way if you want to be happy. And we're saying, no, I don't want to work that way. I want to work another way. No, please work this way. No, I don't want to. Please work this way. And we're insisting and insisting and insisting. Okay, at your own risk. So like you have a machine, if you want to use it in a way other than the way it's designed, at your own risk. There may be a warning. Now, don't open this panel or you'll get an electric shock. I want to open the panel. I want to open the panel. At your own risk. Sometimes at a body of water, there's a sign, swim at your own risk. So, okay, you want to try to use this body for the satisfaction of the senses of this body for yourself. It's not going to work out very well. Dukkayami, samsparshaja, the happiness that comes from the contact of the senses with their objects. Sparsha means touch, jam means birth. Dukkayami, yoni means womb. Birthplace. Dukkha means misery. If your happiness comes from contacting the senses of this body with their objects, you're going to get misery. That's how this machine works. That's the instructions. So what do you do? How do you become? So if you're a person who wants to work in the world, what we call a fruitive worker, someone who's trying to enjoy the objects of this world, so the instruction for that person is yat kiroshi yat ignasi yat dahosi vidantiya yat tapasesi kanteyas tat kumishvavaravana. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away, whatever austerities you perform, do that as an offering to Krishna, the owner. If you're a philosopher, right? Because the fruitive workers, they think, I'm this body. I'm here to enjoy the world. Okay, offer the fruits to Krishna. The philosopher thinks, I'm this mind. Okay, I'm not the body, I'm the mind. That's the instruction for that person. Bhagunam jaminam lante yanamamam papatate vasudevam sarvamiti samahat vasudevam. Try to understand philosophically, theoretically, that there's an owner who you should be pleasing and in a relationship with. And then eventually, you'll come to a relationship with that person. And then there are others, like Prabhupada says here, who think that they are the owner. Some people think they're the room. Some people think that they're the computer manipulating the body. And some people think that they're the owner and they're the controller. The supreme illusion. And what about for those people? For those people, they should meditate on the Lord in the heart, and eventually they may understand, oh, I have a relationship of love with the Lord in the heart. But even the beginning bhakta, the beginning person in Krishna consciousness, right from the very beginning, starts in a relationship of loving service and realizes this is not really about paying rent, it's not really about paying taxes, it's not really about following the laws. That's for the rebellious souls. What this is really about is an exchange of love. That the owner of everything is not so much interested just in my doing sacrifices and philosophy in order to pay my taxes. What he's really interested in is an exchange of love and using everything in a loving way. That's what he really, really wants. I mean, if I just pay my taxes and my rent and I try to follow the laws, that's better than using my home for criminal activities. But he's really not about that at all. That's not the interest of the owner. The interest of the owner is to have a loving relationship. So how do we do that? How do we know how to behave in this world specifically? How do I choose my own behavior? Well, at least I follow the law. Minimum. I'm in the government's house, I'm in the landlord's house. At least I follow the rules. How do you know the rules? Guru Sadhu Shastra telling you what are the rules. Don't use your body for illicit sex. Don't put animal carcasses in your body. Don't put poisonous intoxicants in your body. Don't try to make your money by cheating others and gambling. Those are baseline rules. Now don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, don't murder. Stay within those boundaries. And then what else do I do? Well, I figure out what kind of room that I have. What vehicle am I riding in? And I use that to please the owner. I figure out what kind of body and mind am I in. I have a particular nature. I figure out what my nature is and I use that in Krishna's service. So I stay within the rules of Guru Sadhu and Shastra. I figure out my nature. I use my nature in Krishna's service. Then according to time, place, and circumstance. So I use my nature to please the owner according to my circumstance. And I wanted to point out something really interesting about circumstance. Remember I asked you, John, maybe I asked you in the beginning a question about the verse? Does anybody remember the question I asked? That swapna is not in the translation. So, in preparing for this class, I went to look at the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, and I found a very different translation and a very different purport. So I thought I would share that with you. So his translation was, momentarily realizing the Lord externally in all things, and internally as well, he then fainted. It was like seeing a dream whose witness is internal reflection. Is that a vastly different translation? Do you get it again? I'll read Prabhupada's purport again, then I'll read the Prabhupada's verse again, then I'll read this one. King Vilayadwaja attained perfect knowledge by being able to distinguish the super soul from the individual soul. The individual soul is localized, whereas the super soul is all pervasive. He became perfect in knowledge that the material body is not the soul, but that the soul is the witness of the material body. And in this translation, is momentarily realizing the Lord externally in all things and internally as well, he then fainted. It was like seeing a dream whose witness is internal reflection. Quite different. And then Srila Prabhupada's purport focused on what?
What was the last, the very last, whose witness is internal
reflection? Is internal reflection. I'll explain that. It'll be explained in his purport.
I just cannot get English.
Whose witness is internal reflection. What is the witness of a dream? When you have a dream, who's the only witness of the dream? Your own internal reflection. There's no other witness. So it was like a dream whose witness is internal reflection. What was Srila Prabhupada's main points? What were Srila Prabhupada's main points in his purport?
The categorization of the differences.
Differences between the body, the soul, and the super soul. Okay. And this is in division of Chakravarti Thakur's purport. By that rati, is referring to the previous verse, that Vilayadwaja had attained the stage of rati, or bhava, for the Lord. By that rati, the Lord appeared everywhere. He realized, vidvan, the Lord as a form, suddenly appearing in all directions, vyapakataya, because of the appearance of rati, and he realized the Lord within himself, separately, vratiritataya. By the fire of eagerness for praying, he fainted, virarama. The separation was not fully relieved by the sudden appearance of the Lord arising from intense separation. An example is given. It was just like knowing something in a dream. The hunger of a person is not relieved by eating food in a dream. What is the proof for such appearances of the Lord? The function of the antakarana is reflection is the witness, not a person with an eye. Because the pain of separation does not disappear by the function of the antakarana with his internal vision, he also realized the Lord who had appeared in his vision directly with his eyes. So here, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying, because of the love for the Lord that Vilayadwaja had, he saw the Lord everywhere around him and within his heart. But his vision was like the vision of a dream. It was only an internal vision. That vision failed to satisfy him until he also saw the Lord with his eyes. So why do you think that Srila Prabhupada gave the purport that he did to this verse?
Because it's easier.
Easier?
To simplify understanding for us.
Okay, well Srila Prabhupada certainly also talks about these other terms. So to simplify understanding for us, why else do you think Prabhupada gave this specific purport?
I always think of emphasis that we need to hear these things over and over again in a very, very simple and clear way.
Yes, to emphasize that. I only have Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport. I don't have the purports of the other acharyas who may be saying things very similar to also to what Srila Prabhupada said here. But also we know that Srila Prabhupada, my point was that we serve the Lord according to time, place, and circumstance. And Srila Prabhupada is giving us a commentary on this verse that's specifically geared to the needs of his audience. Because Srila Prabhupada knows that impersonal philosophy is very prevalent in the world today. This idea that I am God, or materialistic philosophy, this idea that I am the body. And therefore we find that Srila Prabhupada will emphasize these points over and over. Certainly he also talks about these other things, such as seeing the Lord within, seeing the Lord externally, attaining the platform of rati, attaining the platform of prema. At the same time, we find that his emphasis is on, you're not this body, and you're not God. And if you're not this body, and you're not God, then you should be using your body and your mind for the pleasure of the Lord. So of course, our particular question is, to what extent am I doing that? To what extent am I recognizing the truth at every moment of the day? And the truth is, I'm not this body. I don't belong to this world. There's another owner. There's another occupier who wants to have a loving exchange with me. For the present time, using this body and mind and things of this world. And am my actions in that truth? Or are my actions in a falsity that I am this world or that I am the owner of this world? What's motivating my actions? And if truth is what's motivating my actions, then what's the nature of truth? Satchitananda. The nature of truth is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. So if my behavior is motivated by truth, then I will feel happiness. I will be full of knowledge, as it says in Satvagun. Satvagun is truth. All the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge, and I will feel myself to be eternal. There won't be any fear. I'll have complete sense of security. So I'll have happiness, I'll have meaning, I'll have knowledge, I'll have satisfaction, and I'll have full security. And if I'm operating from a platform of falsity, then I'll have pain and suffering. So I want to thank you very much. All glories to you. I have to end now. Right, 8:30. I got several emails. You better end it. I have no questions. Thank you very much.